Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Thursday, January 25th. We've got plenty of crime news to bring you today, but first, a money launderer who helped smuggle people across the channel in small boats has been sentenced to 8 years in prison. Ashgar Geshlagian was a middleman who carried cash from asylum seekers to gang leaders. He was arrested in 2021 following a two-year investigation by the National Crime Agency. Reporter Matthew Thompson has been in court.
Some of the evidence presented was actually from an ITV documentary in which they interviewed an anonymous people smuggler who referenced a Mr. G, a broker that they used to transfer money. And lo and behold, that turned out to be Mr. Geshlagian.
It comes as it's been a quiet week for channel crossings with no boats detected in the past 7 days.
Kent Online News.
A man who attacked a worker at a co-op near Sittingbourne has been sent to prison. Jack Wiley punched his victim in the head after they spotted him trying to steal alcohol and food from the store in Merston on Monday. The 28-year-old from Whiting Crescent in Faversham has been locked up for 6 months and told to pay compensation. A woman's been arrested on suspicion of attacking a paramedic who was trying to treat her at Tunbridge Wells railway station. Emergency crews were called when she was found unresponsive last night. She's been taken into custody. We're told the paramedic wasn't badly injured. A man who robbed a co-op in Kent before leading police on a chase into London has been sentenced to 2 years behind bars. Jake Sims took two cash boxes after forcing his way into the store in East Peckham in June last year. The 29-year-old from Southwark will be banned from driving when he's released from prison. A dessert shop in Canterbury has been cordoned off by police after a suspected arson attack. Firefighters were called to Heavenly Desserts at the Riverside Complex in the early hours of this morning. Officers say the site's previously been targeted with racist graffiti and the blaze is thought to have been started deliberately. A man's been arrested on suspicion of stealing sandwiches and cakes from a bakery in Chatham. He tried to run away from officers after being spotted on the high street on Monday. The 43-year-old's been recalled to prison for an unrelated matter. Police are hunting two men following an aggravated burglary in Tenterton. They're said to have knocked on a door on Ashford Road and threatened the resident while demanding money. We've shared a CCTV image of one of the suspects at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Now, this has been one of our most read stories online today. A mum is demanding a full refund and an apology after half her son's birthday cake was eaten after being accidentally left at a Chatham bowling alley. This has been quite a divisive story that's drawn a lot of comments at Kent Online. Lucy's got some more details.
Lisa Sheehan had paid around £80 for the Thomas the Tank Engine themed birthday cake for her six-year-old son George, but after the party had finished and the guests had gone, what was left of the cake was accidentally left behind. Lisa said she phoned the venue immediately after noticing it wasn't with them, but was told by staff at Chatham Bowl in the Pentagon Shopping Centre that it had been eaten by guests on a neighbouring lane.
Lisa's been quite critical of the venue.
Yes, she says it was obvious that the family had intended to take the cake away because it had been boxed up. She also says the staff had a duty of care to put it aside and contact them once they noticed it had been left.
Has there been any reaction from the company?
Well, bosses at Disco Bowl Limited say if someone leaves an item in a public place, it is not our responsibility. The cake was abandoned on the lanes. No member of staff was notified it was being taken. It was eaten by an adjacent lane and it is perfectly reasonable to be considered as rubbish. This is backed up by our CCTV. Managing Director Peter Terry says they won't be offering an apology or a refund and the family are now banned from the centre.
Thanks, Lucy. The story's generated quite a big reaction online, with a lot of people siding with the venue. To read their comments and to have your say, head to Kent Online. Bosses in Kent will review their CCTV systems after confirming some of the surveillance cameras are from an alleged unethical Chinese supplier. Tech giant Hikvision has always denied human rights abuse allegations and suggestions the equipment can be used for spying. KCC say their system is secure and will make upgrades only when it's needed. South East Water has apologised as homes in Cranbrook have been having trouble with their water supplies. Bosses have blamed it on recent storms and power cuts and an increase in burst pipes. Sophia Aiken from our colleagues at KMTV has been speaking to Bella Beeler, who runs a candle-making business and was without water for 24 hours.
We received a text message in the morning saying there'll be a water cut, and it started happening early afternoon. So we didn't have any water at all. And then it went up to this morning.
How has it disrupted you as a person, but also your business as well?
So as a person, my studio is at home. So everything went really chaotic, let's say. But as a business, because I rely on water sometimes to wash, sometimes I do need the water to make my recipes for my products, and without water, so cannot work. And it happens all the time. And then it seems like last year happened in January as well. And that's my busiest period where I need to produce. So I need to make stuff ahead for the year.
And it's not the first time it's happened to you, is it? So it must be quite frustrating.
It is. So it happened a couple of times already. So can count. So last year was around 3 times. So and starting again this year. But I hope towards the end of the year, it won't happen anymore.
And I know last time I spoke to you in August, you were struggling to get the compensation back from South East Water. So I know you eventually got it back. Is that something you're concerned could kind of happen this time round or in the future?
Yeah, I'm really hoping not, because it's a nightmare when you need to wait for compensation. You need to just send a complaint. So you spend your time whilst you could be doing something else, just trying to fill up forms and asking for compensation. So, but fingers crossed it won't happen anymore.
Have they said anything to you? Because it's happened so many times now. I know Cranbrook's quite it happens quite a lot in Cranbrook. Have they said anything as to kind of console you or say that it won't happen again or anything like that?
Nope. They haven't. No communication apart from this text message letting us know in advance, which is, it's good. So you can plan your day around. But if they say the water will come back late in the evening or on the following day, so I don't trust anymore until you actually see the water coming out from the tap.
South East Water say most people's supplies have now been restored. A Broadstairs man says his 2-year-old daughter was left to wet herself in a seaside arcade because staff refused to let her use the toilet. The dad had paid for his family to play at the Flamingo in Margate last Saturday, but was told the child could only use the facilities if they were playing the Lost Island Adventure Golf, which is in the same building. Company bosses have since apologised and slammed the closure of public toilets by the council. Bosses of a restaurant in Ramsgate, who travelled to the seaside to feed the homeless, have hit back at their critics. Ali Akpinar shared his act of kindness on social media last Friday as he delivered leftover food from the Minster Meze and Grill. Some people slammed the move, saying good deeds should be done quietly. Ali says he's hoping to inspire others to do the same.
Kent Online News.
A woman from Ashford says it's vital. We all know the symptoms of breast cancer after almost missing hers. Joy Davis was suffering from a bleeding nipple and only went to the GP because her husband encouraged her.
And it is all down to my husband that I actually went and got it checked out in the first place. I don't know how graphic I can be on it, but I went. So I had a bleeding nipple, which back in March, April time of 23, and I put it down to thinking I was going through the menopause due to having a hysterectomy 4 years prior. So I had no symptoms of menopause. I couldn't tell whether it was. So we went on holiday and he was really worried about it. So I eventually made an appointment at the doctor's. He then sent me to the breast clinic. Bit of a whirlwind. I had breast exam. They sent me that same day for a mammogram, who then sent me to ultrasound, who then did a biopsy. I still at that point didn't really think too much of it. And then I had my results in August, and I had a 5-centimeter tumor in my breast, and I had something called Paget's disease of the nipple, which is also a cancer on the outside. So I knew that I would have to have chemo, and then I would have to have a mastectomy once that chemo had done, which I finished yesterday. And luckily for me, the tumour has shrunk to nothing, but I do still have to have my mastectomy in February of this year.
And how's that sort of been for you? It sounds like it's all happened quite quickly. It all sort of was quite it all happened quite quickly, didn't it?
Yeah, so they have been an amazing team. I mean, right from the very start, it's been appointment after appointment. I've diary entried on like my phone so that I've documented how I felt over the different treatments, so I can sort of have a bit of a reference to go back to see how I'm feeling. Normally after chemo I get a day or two of feeling okay, and then it really hits for about a week. But yeah, it's all been very quick. And like I said, I finished my chemo yesterday, so now it's just a waiting game for the next bit, mastectomy, and then possible radiation afterwards.
So. And I guess often when you think of breast cancer, you think of having lumps, don't you? So it's quite, has this sort of been a bit of an eye-opener, and I guess perhaps there needs to be more education around the different types of symptoms that can come with it?
Massively. I couldn't feel a lump. There was nothing, even though it was quite big. I do check my boobs, you know, like they tell you there's so much more awareness over it. Obviously with Amy Dowden being in the public eye with Strictly and everything last year, I've massively followed her story because it was relevant to me at the time. But yeah, I had no idea. It was literally this one symptom that I didn't think anything of. And yeah, I think there is so much more to it. And if there is anything, go and get it checked. Like, I left it long enough, I think.
Kent Online News.
Plans to build 150 new homes across three developments in Dover have been recommended for approval. The projects in Wingham, Whitfield and East Langdon would also include open spaces and a children's playground. Local families hope it will provide affordable housing options. Others fear it will bring house prices in the area down. If you live in Medway, you're being asked what you think about the towns and what could be improved. Bosses have launched what's called the One Medway Plan, which highlights their priorities over the next 4 years. They include things like having good education, quality jobs and affordable homes. Leader Vince Maple now wants to hear from the residents.
I'm really proud that we're consulting the public on our One Medway Council plan at the moment. This is the first time that's ever happened. The public have never been consulted on it before. So from my perspective, it's important we've started that. Some of these will be quite stretching targets as well. It's worth to recognise that. But we wanted a plan which was achievable but challenging, but also importantly recognising the priorities of this council and the priorities of the public, which we think are attuned. And again, that's why we're continuing the consultation as we speak.
And speaking of the public, you've requested public opinion with the forms that have been sent out. How are you reaching out for those public opinions, and how important are they to the council plan?
We will always do everything we can to, you know, encourage people to play their part. You know, people's lives are busy, so the council asking you for your views on everything, you know, can take some time out of your life. But we, as a Labour and Cooperative Administration, really value the views of our residents. We see it as a partnership approach. So from that perspective, that's why we're going out to, you know, for the first time ever, to show people we want to hear their views on what we think the key priorities will be over the next few years of their council, recognising, of course, the challenging set of circumstances we find ourselves in, particularly when it comes to the issue of a local government finance.
And on a more financial approach, how are you planning to budget this new council plan and all these improvements in with all the other costs that come with running the council?
We'll be setting our budget on the 29th of February, and the One Medway plan will go to our annual council meeting in May. It's worth saying that, yes, whatever we were doing as a council, whatever our plan showed, actually, you know, with things like the 91% cut we've seen in revenue support grants since 2010, it is a challenge and is difficult. And I'm under no illusion that we will have to take difficult decisions when it comes to that budget setting on February the 29th. But for me, the alternative, if we weren't to set those challenging budgets, would be regrettably handing the keys over to Michael Gove and central government to run the council. And that's not what people voted for on May the 4th.
Are there any changes you're hoping to see across Medway, like physically? How is the space going to change?
Well, one of the things I really want to see and I value is people having pride in our community. I'm really proud of Medway. It's a great community made up of the five towns, the peninsula, and the community as a whole, a true One Medway approach. So over the lifetime of this plan, I want people to feel more proud of where they live. And that can come through a number of different ways, whether it's improving our high streets and town centres, you know, enhancing our green spaces, making sure people have got good opportunities for employment and, importantly, assisting when they have poor health. All of those things, I think, build the place that we call Medway into a place that I want people to be more proud of.
Medway Council are also asking residents what they think about plans for a new music festival. The Dream Valley event is due to be held at the Great Lions Heritage Park in Gillingham this summer. Previous proposals for a festival there last year were cancelled, but organisers are hoping to get the go-ahead this time around. Ambitious plans for a huge concert hall in Ashford have been put on hold as developers make some changes. The £9 million project called Ashford Live would transform the former Mecca Bingo Hall and Vicarage Lane car park. It had hoped to draw West End shows, music concerts and opera to the county. Focus is now on the old hall, which could be reopened as a cinema instead. And if it stays clear, you might be able to see the wolf moon over Kent tonight. It's the first full moon of the year and was named as wolves are traditionally thought to howl more in the middle of winter.
Kent Online Sports.
A Maidstone gymnast has revealed 2024 could be his final year competing. James Hall has represented Great Britain and England at World and European Championships, as well as the Commonwealth Games. Now he's hoping to be selected for this summer's Olympics in Paris after helping Team GB qualify in 2022. The 28-year-old has been telling KMTV's Bartholomew Hall what it's like training in an Olympic year.
Naturally, it's going to be a stressful time, but I've got a lot of experience. I think from a lengthy career, I've managed to garner quite a lot of experience, and over the years it's kind of helped me keep a cool head, and it'll be full on, but I'm looking forward to the challenge, and I think this will probably be one of the last years of my career, getting a bit old now, but body's starting to feel it, but I'm ready for the challenge. And I think as you get a little bit older, you think, you know what, this is less about just making the team, but, you know, fulfilling my potential, whatever that may be, and giving it my all.
You've had quite a few international competitions, but of course it's only your second Olympics. What did you learn from the first time around that you can bring with you this time?
I think, you know, no matter what we do, we're always analysing, and that might be in the club with my coach or with my teammates that were at the games, or teammates that didn't quite make the games. We're always talking strategy about how we can get a team medal, how we can get individual medals. And I think for me, my approach this time will, again, to leave no stone unturned. And I think that has always been my motto, to give everything I can give, whether it's in the gym or out the gym. But yeah, it'll be all guns blazing, so I'm looking forward to it, and I'm ready for the challenge.
Is there any sense of some sort of weight that's been lifted off your shoulder in a bit that you're coming back for a second time?
Yeah, I think a career goal for me ever since I was little, you know, as far back as I can remember, it was Olympic Games. It was never a medal or this type of medal, this colour, because winning for me has never been about gold, silver or bronze. It's been about, again, giving my all and trying to inspire others, no matter what age they are, to sort of, you know, go for their dreams as well. So yeah, the weight's not so much on my shoulders, but again, I hold myself to high account, so we'll see what we can do.
You mentioned there being a youngster, you've been here for most of your life really, since you've started gymnastics. What would you say to that 6 or 7 year old who first stepped foot in this place?
I think go for your dreams. I mean, it's never going to be smooth sailing. It's going to be tough. You're going to have the highs and the lows, and sometimes there'll be more of one than the other, and it will chop and change. But I think as long as you keep the love in the sport and realise that, you know, you're doing this because you love it, and not for money, not for this, not for that. It's, you know, it's a beautiful sport, and I'd say that to my younger self, and I'd say that to any youngster coming up.
And you actually, your family moved here from Australia before, so what was it like growing up in Maidstone? Do you still have those family links back to Australia?
Yeah, we've got a couple of family members that still live over there. I guess the trade-off was the weather. but yeah, Maidstone's been my home for, 26 years now, and it's been brilliant. You know, I've got such a close-knit community here with family, friends, and of course the club is both of those things to me. And yeah, it's just, I count myself very lucky. I think it's rare for an athlete to start at a club and see it all the way through to the end.
Before we wrap up, I just want to know, what is the day in the life for you in an Olympic year?
I think for me, like I said, it's a very stressful year. So finding those little wins that you can take to sort of take your mind off of the gym. Gymnastics isn't just a sport or a hobby, it's a lifestyle. It's kind of one of those things that as soon as you finish session, you can't just switch off. You go home, you think about it, and that can be a recipe for overthinking. So I think looking after my chickens, walking my dogs, whatever that may be, just keeping myself distracted.
Chickens, that's fantastic. What's the story there? Have you always had chickens?
Yeah, well, my mum and dad, they've always kept chickens, and mum's always been one for rescue hens, and she's had a few, and she called me one day and just said, oh, there's some rescue hens going, do you want some? And that was midweek, and by the weekend I had chickens, so that was that.
And briefly in cricket, Kent's Zach Crawley has opened the batting for England in their first Test match in India. He scored 20 before being caught out earlier this morning. It's the first of 5 matches that will be played over the next 6 weeks. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.